Let's begin with the Rockets, who improved to 3-0 without Chris Paul after his latest injury. They cruised by the Celtics at Toyota Center last night, 127-113. Another dominant performance from James Harden. He poured in 45 against Boston's third-ranked defense. He doesn't usually talk much about the MVP race, but Harden was pretty upfront about things last night.
Of course I should be in that conversation. I receive a lot of hate, but you know that won't stop me from going out there and killing every single night and being that dog that I am. You can name, you know, a few other people that should be in the conversation, but realistically, it's coming back.
Rockets have today off before they play the Pelicans on the road tomorrow night. I'd feel weird if I called myself a dog. Just saying.
It's killing it, man. Come on, Mike.
He is killing it. This is now, let's see, 8 games in a row with 30 or more points.
Pretty good stuff.
We were talking in the first commercial break about Harden, and you mentioned the fact that in the regular season he has been a dominant player. And I don't, and when we say that, I don't think it's like in any pejorative or negative sense. And do you watch the English Premier League? I don't.
The one where they kick the ball around and try to put it in the net?
Are you into that?
I'm not into that.
I thought you were. I assumed you were. I don't know why.
I mean, and it's no. No, I'm not.
The reason I bring this up is because, so in the English Premier League, they have like multiple championships they play for, right? And
yeah.
The biggest one is whoever wins the regular season, like whoever wins on points, like that's the big championship. So if the NBA was like that, Harden would be basically an immortal, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
Like he would be an immortal.
You mean the season where they pour blood, sweat, and tears into 5.5, 6 months of work versus the one where they put in, you know, 20 some odd games?
Exactly. Yes. So that's one point I wanted to make. Can this Austin Rivers thing sustain itself? Because, I mean, I don't want to overreact based on a couple games, but he's provided an actually nice boost to this team, both offensively and, I think, defensively as well.
Well, let's put it this way. When everybody's healthy and Chris Paul's back in the lineup and gets his 30 minutes a night, and James Ennis is healthy and available to Mike D'Antoni, James Ennis is not going to be in this rotation. Austin Rivers is.
Do they play slightly different positions?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
But in the group that they have now, when the season began, you had Gerald Green and James Ennis. And then you added Daniel House. And then you added Austin Rivers. And of those four players now that take up those comparable minutes, the least productive among them and the one who fits your system the least well is James Ennis.
I could see that, unless he's hitting shots.
Which is, again, of that group of four, who would you have the most confidence in to be hitting wide-open three-point shots?
Yeah, he's kind of iffy when it comes to that. Now, he might provide more defensively than some of those guys can.
Could be,
which is something to watch out for.
And I do think Austin Rivers defending players of comparable size to Austin Rivers is excellent. And
yes,
much better than the other, you know, probably better than House and better than Green.
Up next in headlines, the Texans got some welcome news as they hit the practice field to get set for Sunday's game against the Jaguars. Lamar Miller was a full go after missing last week against the Eagles. This running game, you guys don't need me to say this, it has been anemic in the last couple of games. I think the stat is basically that running backs have rushed for 87 yards combined in the last three games. So 87 rushing yards in the last three. Rivers McCown, I don't know if you subscribe to The Athletic, but I was reading Rivers McCown's work.
It's my understanding they're offering some sort of deal.
I feel like they're always offering a deal. Always. So I took the plunge. I'm like, let me do this, whatever. Like, I work in sports. I read way too much. And Rivers broke down with like a, and he does clips that like even a simple person like myself in terms of football, like X's and O's and film can understand. And I'm going through this and it's like, God, it's a mess. Like, the clips that he's showing, it's like, it's a litany of issues. It's like, O'Brien's asking way too much of his tight ends to, like, wrap around the formation, speed from here to here to get the edge guy. Or it's guys missing blocks or being overpowered at the line of scrimmage. Or it's running backs not, you know, clearly seeing holes that are there when they are actually there. That, to me, is the tangible thing I would like to see on Sunday. Like, pass defense against Bortles obviously has to get better. But they got to start running the football. I mean, they just to some extent. Because if they keep running the ball like this, they should never run the ball. I mean, if they run the ball like this, they should pass the ball on every single play.
And some people would look at how they performed on the final three drives of the game. Remember that first of those three drives, they ended up losing the ball on downs on fourth and nine. Well, they were at third and one. But Deshaun Watson took an 8-yard sack. Then he threw a 5-yard pass to Alfred Blue, who got crushed on that play and had to limp off the field. But that ended a very good, very successful drive. They were down 2 scores. The next 2 drives finished with touchdowns, and essentially they didn't pass the ball exclusively, sadly, but very, very close to it. They just said, well, we can't run, so we're going to throw it. The whole premise of their defense is to force other teams to do just that. It hasn't worked very well because the Texans were awesome at stopping the Eagles from running the football. Outside of Darren Sproles' early run in the game, they couldn't move the ball. They were going to punt every time unless they decide, let's just have Nick throw it every play, which he did, and which helped them put 32 points on the board. When the Texans go that route, that's when the Twitterverse explodes into, why don't they just throw it all the time?
Yep.
What's wrong with all this play calling? And yes, the majority of the run calls they've made these last 3 weeks are they're give-ups. There's no way that they're looking at their play sheet and saying, this is going to get us 7 to 10 yards. Well, this has a chance to work. It can't work.
Here's where I'm at on this. So this has been a big subject of contention on this show because McClain came in here 3 weeks ago and was acting like this running game was legitimately good, and so we were yelling back and forth. Really, Seth was about that. And
what?
Then, yeah.
No
yelling
way.
On the show. Shocking. But so my thought was, okay, I thought the running game was okay. I mean, I have a pretty high standard when it comes to good, because if you're a good running game, I can trust you every single week, and I can't trust these guys. Having said that, I'm a little surprised at just how anemic the running game has been. When you look at what they were able to do against Miami, against Tennessee, even Cleveland, like there were moments in those games, entire halves and quarters even, when they were just like ripping through teams, like big holes against teams, in the case of Tennessee, that are not particularly awful against the run, and they just have not been able to do anything at all in these last 3 games.
Well, let's say hypothetically you were you're flying during the holidays, and hypothetically you were sitting in the airport at 5 a.m. about 2 or 3 hours before your flight took off, because you were a little worried that maybe the weather or the idea of holiday flying and the airport would be a bad combination for you, so you had some time to kind of dig through the running numbers. Hypothetically, yes. I had a chance to do that on Monday morning flying out of Philadelphia after covering the Texans game. So you were running through kind of where they're at over these last 3 games. Just keep this in mind. Lamar Miller's been terrible over the last 3 games. He only played in 2 of them, and he's still, like Alfred Blue, has 41 yards rushing in those 3 games combined.
Yep.
Leads the Texans running backs at 2.41 yards per carry. He and Alfred Blue should be patting themselves on the back that they're not Dante Foreman, who gained negative yards overall in his first game back, and that obviously was against the Eagles. So 17 carries for Miller, 19 for Blue, 7 for Foreman. Those are the 43 carries that the running backs have had over those 3 games. 7 of those carries for 1 yard, 6 for 0 yards, 6 more for -1 yards, and tack on another 5 for -2 yards or worse. 24 of 43 pops from their running backs over a 3-game span have gone for 1 yard or worse. 3 carries have gone for 5 yards or more. I'm excluding Deshaun Watson from that discussion.
Because he's been basically like their Earl Campbell the last 3 games.
I mean, 16 for 111, discounting his 1 kneel down.
Yeah.
That's good work. That's almost 7 yards a carry.
I mean, don't they I feel like they have to be running better than this to win a playoff game. They have to. You look at the first game against the team that they'll play on Sunday, Jacksonville. They ran for like $140 against Jacksonville the first time. I think Miller had like 22 for 100. I mean, that would be like the Oasis at this point, right?
The only way they could get around your statement being true is if Kiki Kuti returns and is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because teams are going to be able to load up. They're going to know they can stop the run without trying to stop the run. They're not going to have to send out personnel groups or run blitzes in an effort to do such a thing. If the Texans can't run the football and then everyone goes, well, just let him throw. Well, then they're going to start being able to pile up on Deshaun Watson unless he has the proper guys out there with him. I think Carter is still not quite there, not quite on the same page, and he's going to be your outlet. He's going to be your safety net, your hot read. not nine times out of 10, but a good majority of the time. And now when if QT is able to get back out there on the field with you, then that enhances your ability to thwart some of those blitzes, to prevent all of those hits. I don't think he's been getting killed like he was at the beginning of the year. There's the number is scaring people, how many times he's getting hit and how many times he's being sacked. But he was getting hit hard, viciously, at the beginning of the season. That's been very infrequent over the second half of the season.
Up next in headlines, Baylor wins an exciting Academy Sports and Outdoors Texas Bowl last night, 45-38. 52-yard catch and run was the difference with 2 minutes to play. Good back and forth, more than 1,000 yards of total offense. Three bowl games today, including Syracuse taking on West Virginia this afternoon at the Camping World Bowl. Iowa State takes on Washington State in the Alamo Bowl. Tomorrow has the big semifinals, of course. That will begin with the Cotton Bowl, Clemson and Notre Dame. Top-seeded Alabama faces number 4 Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl at 7. Not a lot of times will a game from 6 years ago have such a big impact on the way people are thinking about tomorrow. But Brian Kelly of Notre Dame was asked about their shellacking in the national title game against Alabama yesterday.
How big of a win will it be to put 2012 to rest? Was that it?
Yeah.
I put that to rest the next day. That's why we're back here, you know, building our football team to get an opportunity to be back and compete for a national championship. So, you know, we've put that behind us because you can't move forward, you know, unless you're thinking about building your football team. We think we've got a very good football team, and our goal has been to win a national championship and get back to that. We're back here now. We've got to win football game. We got a really good opponent in Clemson. We know the challenge in front of us, but we're excited about it.
If I was in Las Vegas today, I would actually make a bet on Notre Dame against the spread. I actually think that strongly about it. Notre Dame's underdogs by 12.5 points. And Adam, I don't see it. Listen, Clemson's a good football team. These guys haven't been tested in forever. I mean, look at their schedule.
Wait, which team are you talking about hasn't been tested in forever?
Clemson hasn't been tested.
I mean, these two teams, at least in my opinion, compared to Oklahoma and Alabama, probably would both fit that particular description.
Okay.
But I tend to agree, certainly when you look at the conference competition that Clemson was up against this year, they've managed to have games where either the quarterback was an issue, obviously the injury, the switch at quarterback, a couple of different things have happened over the course of their season where they didn't even have to be at their best. And not only would they win, more often than not, it would be blowout city. I think that that's definitely a factor going into this game. They don't look like what they've done over the course of the season suggests of some sort of 42-14 domination. It was amazing. Like, clearly, when the playoff was announced, it was actually during a Texan game when they laid out all those things. But the first thing that I think people noticed after, oh, they got in and they didn't, was how big these semifinal spreads were.
Yes.
Both games, double figures, and nothing's really changed. It's fluctuated a little bit. I think the other underdog is who I'd feel better about in Oklahoma.
All right, so Oklahoma comes in as 14-point dogs. So you think this is a live dog tomorrow in Miami?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And Aaron Colvin told me yesterday not to sleep on the Sooners.
Not to sleep on them.
Not to sleep
okay.
on the Sooners.
Aaron Colvin says don't sleep on a team made the Final Four.
Yeah, we made the rounds a little bit yesterday with the Texans because there's representation now. It's kind of funny how their locker room is situated. Offense and defense is kind of on opposite ends, which means Oklahoma and Colvin and Kareem Jackson and Alabama are at one end of the locker room.
And
then
guys.
Notre Dame with Nick Martin and Will Fuller are essentially on the other end with DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson, although, to be fair, Carlos Watkins and DJ Reader, Clemson's got it covered no matter what, but
yes.
Everybody's represented. You know, Hopkins had his Clemson hat on yesterday. There was a little bit of chatter between them all. They said it'll probably pick up closer to the weekend, yesterday only being Thursday, and Saturday the day before their game that really matters gets there. But yeah, with Oklahoma's potency on offense, with the possibility that Brown returns to their offense, they are should they be able to stop Alabama? Clearly no. But should they be able to keep up with them offensively? It sure seems like yes.
They can probably keep up with anybody with their quarterback. And speaking of that, the funniest thing that happened yesterday in college football was this quote by Quinnen Williams, who is arguably Alabama's best player. He is, you know, first-team All-American, all that. Take a listen to what this might be better in video form, but you'll get this in audio anyway, okay? So this is Quinnen Williams, Bama's best player, being asked about Kyler Murray.
Have you gone up against any quarterback that slightly resembles Kyler Murray?
No, I don't feel like I have going against a quarterback slightly resembling Kyler Murray, but I feel like Kyler Murray is not where everybody...
What's that?
No, I'm good.
What's that?
He clearly caught himself. Like, do you think he just had an image of Nick Saban pop up in his mind as he was going into the... Well, Kyler Murray isn't as good as people are saying he is.
Just for us, just for the people, the fans, the listeners of this program, sports fans in general, you kind of need, in this case, you need a Bama victory so we can get the rest of the answer, right? Because yeah. If they lose, he's certainly not going to say, well, Kyler Murray's not, he's not going to finish it for us now that they've knocked him off and finished their undefeated season and ruined their national championship. But if they win, and due to Kyler Murray, what clearly Williams think they should, he'll tell us what he was thinking. I wonder what he was thinking. What was he thinking?
What was he thinking?
He's not all that. He's not...
He's not as good as you guys think he is?
That seems so simple.
Yeah.
But yes, it's something you would not want to say a couple days before the game.
But do you think that the Alabama players believe that Kyler Murray is not that good?
No.
Because I think that's a take that nobody has, right?
Right. I mean, unless their coaching staff has brainwashed him, which would seemingly be awful, wouldn't you want them to think he's good? Because he clearly is.
Now, sometimes you might have a situation where, like, if an opposing player is being built up so much, then as a football coach, you got to be like, all right, here are his weaknesses, and I think we can, like, do a lot of damage against this guy. But I don't really see that being the case for this game tomorrow.
I mean, this is Alabama, whose quarterback is Tua, whose quarterback should have won the Heisman, according to them, and who didn't win the Heisman because this guy won it.
Yes.
There's just some animosity built up for that and that alone. Whether or not he's a capable guy is not really debatable if you watch any college football this past season. And again, to say, who does he compare to? I don't know how many people have even looked at it this way. Alabama's awesome. Their defense is awesome. They are a great team. Who's the best quarterback they played this year?
Alabama? It's got to be Jake Fromm.
Right. And what did he do?
Well, he did some things, but then they kind of stagnated, which Georgia tends to do in big spots at times.
Did he play well? Did he do some things against their defense, as most quarterbacks prior to him had not? Did he throw for 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no picks?
I felt he did. Yeah, I felt like he played well. I didn't even check the box score, so I'm going blindly here. I felt he played well just having a chance to watch the game.
They scored 28 points. They had a chance to win.
It was a win.
That was the best quarterback they faced. They're now facing a quarterback who I think zero would argue against. They're facing a better quarterback
who has better
offensive talent,
yes,
who has a better offensive line, and is much more explosive offensively overall. Oklahoma has a chance to put points on the board against Bama.
All right.
That seems very clear.
Give me a 1 to 100. Like, what's the chance you think Oklahoma wins tomorrow?
It's in the 40s to me. That's
40s?
That's why I think that 14-point spread is insane.
Okay. Well, if you think they have a 40% chance to win...
Let's say it's 40% chance, so it's 60-40. Bama's a clear favorite.
But they should be probably like a 5-point favorite?
In my mind. And maybe I'm underselling Bama because there were so few games where they played 60 minutes. They didn't have to. They dominated everybody.
I mean, that's the tough thing with some of these teams is that the schedules are so disparate that, like, you're comparing, like, you're comparing figuratively apples and oranges, essentially.
Right. So I'm taking it to where we should be compared. How many top five teams did Alabama play this year? Probably.
Georgia.
And how many top five teams did they play that gave them a game all the way to the end?
Georgia.
All of them.
Yes.
All one of them.
Yeah, all one.
And Oklahoma fits in that group, right?
They do.
So why isn't it fair for me to think they'll do the same thing?
Indeed. Now, you could say that Georgia is better than Oklahoma, which a lot of people, I'm guessing, would think. But maybe that changes in the course of a month when you have practice and all that kind of stuff.